back to another episode of the Freedom Talks podcast, everybody. We're here with part two with Dr. Megan Lukey, who just kind of recap, I went to PT school with, and now she is running her own nonprofit organization. Right, Megan? Right? It's a nonprofit?
Yes. Yes, it is, Joe. Yeah. Thanks for having me today.
So just to kind of recap on what we first talked about, we kind of talked about, you know, eating disorders and just, you know, building a healthy mindset and healthy individual. And this week we're going to kind of go through, once we recap some of the signs and symptoms on, you know, if someone is having an issue, what do we do with that information? Who do we go see? What are some of the recovery, you know, kind of checkpoints, both from Megan's, I want to pick Megan's point of view from both her physical therapist background, as well as her business point of view too, because I think she hits it from both. So Megan, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
How's school today? Megan also works in a school, so.
I do. It was a busy day. I have 4K and early childhood groups on Monday, so jam-packed today, but it was a fun day.
Are you at the point of the year, because it's been so nice, that kids are just so stir crazy inside, or not really?
Yes, especially with the few nice, like we had a really nice day last week and today was pretty nice. So the kids are definitely quite antsy and don't want to be inside and just want to be outside. So
just like the rest of us.
Yes.
So Megan, give us just a little information just to kind of refresh some of the signs and symptoms of potentially you or someone else that you are seeing, that they may have a eating disorder, some type of, you know, issue going on that's food related.
So some signs can be that the individual will talk about food quite a bit. Maybe they talk about how they're cutting out certain foods. They're just very focused on food. For people that struggle with eating disorders, up to 90% of their thoughts can be around food. So it makes sense that they would also speak about food quite a bit. So talking about food or foods that they're cutting out. In addition, being very rigid with exercise can be another sign of an eating disorder. Having a hard time taking rest days, just feeling very guilty and shameful if they miss an exercise session. So it's definitely a fine line between, if you're a physical therapist that works with athletes, a fine line between someone that's a dedicated athlete and that someone that has an eating disorder, because sometimes the traits look very similar, like very dedicated, doing extra outside of practice, going above and beyond. But sometimes if it's to the extreme, that can definitely show an eating disorder. Talking about food, the over-exercising, having a very rigid exercise plan. Also someone that has just some body image struggles. So maybe they're constantly looking at their appearance in the mirror as you're walking through the clinic. That's called body checking. They may also talk about their appearance or talk about wanting to lose weight or how they don't look good in the clothes that they're wearing, things like that. In addition, for specific eating disorders, so binge eating disorder is the most common eating disorder where people will just binge eat quite a lot of food in a short period of time, feel guilty and shameful. Bulimia is similar with the binging, except that person will also purge, which purging isn't just vomiting, but laxative abuse, over-exercising. You have anorexia, which is restricting their food intake. Typically, they are underweight for what their body wants to be at and also have body image distortions, so see themselves as much larger than what they actually are. And then you have OSFED, other specified feeding and eating disorders. So they have characteristics of those other three eating disorders, but potentially not to the extent or frequency that the DSM requires for those. So that's kind of some general symptoms, and then also a little bit into the specific eating disorders.
So now if you're with somebody, whether it's me or you as a physical therapist or even a friend, family member, or even if you are the athlete directly, and you kind of, you know, realize that, oh no, I may have a problem. Mm-hmm. What do we do from here?
So if you're noticing these signs in someone else, which it's really common for someone else to see the signs of an eating disorder, just because the person that's struggling with the eating disorder may not even realize that they're struggling. There is a medical term. I cannot pronounce it. It's very long. Anosmia. I've definitely butchered that, but it's where someone doesn't doesn't recognize that they're struggling with an illness. That's really common, especially in restrictive eating disorders where brain chemistry is changing because now we've been in this long state of malnutrition. So people with eating disorders may not even recognize that they're struggling. So if you see someone that is struggling and there's someone that's close to you, maybe a family member or a friend, or if you're a coach, an athlete, or maybe they're your patient, I really encourage you to reach out, even if you're kind of unsure if they're struggling or not. Even just reaching out for clarification is important. And like specifically, how do you reach out? Because I can say like reach out and then how do you do that? So you can use I statements and say things that you've been noticing, like, hey, like I've been noticing that it seems like you've been really rigid with your exercise and it seems like you get really distressed if you can't exercise. Can you tell me more about that? Or, hey, I noticed at the family party that you packed your own food and weren't comfortable eating the cake for the birthday party. Is everything okay with that? Do you have any like food intolerances? And asking questions, so using I statements, saying something that you're noticing and asking a question, being really open, just because if you're kind of confronting someone with an eating disorder, it's very common for people to, I don't want to use the word hostile, but be a bit dismissive of what you're bringing up and then possibly a bit angry as well, just because people with eating disorders tend to do behavior secretively. So for someone to bring that up, probably the first thing they're going to do is deny it. So just really being gentle and just continuing to reach out like, hey, like I'm really worried about you. I noticed that it just seems like you've been really depressed lately. Your eating habits have changed. I noticed that you haven't been spending time with us and instead you've been going to the gym for hours. I'm just really worried about you. I think that you might be struggling with something. Can you please talk to me about that? So those are ways just to kind of reach out to them. And even if they deny that they're struggling or come up with different reasonings for why they're doing a certain thing. For example, it's very common to for individuals with eating disorders to cut out certain food groups. So, for example, if someone stops eating dairy products because they read something bad about that online and they're like, well, I'm lactose intolerant now, or it bothers my stomach. So they may come up with reasons that sound like they could be true and reasonable reasons, but that could just be kind of a front for wanting to avoid a certain food group because they're afraid of it or afraid of what it will do to their body. So that's kind of if you notice something in someone else. In terms of if it's your patient, the same thing, like, hey, I noticed that it just seems like it's harder for you to do the exercises through the sessions, that it seems like you're really fatigued. And I noticed that you really talk about your appearance quite a bit. Do you struggle with food and body image? Like, I would definitely love to chat with you about that. I know there's no judgment here. So that can definitely be a great way. If the person isn't open to discussing that with you and it seems like they're really struggling, like maybe they've had significant weight loss or weight gain, maybe they've mentioned purging behaviors and no desire to stop, reaching out to their primary care doctor and letting them know your concerns too would be helpful as well. So in terms of if you yourself are struggling and kind of notice that you're struggling, what can you do for next steps? So really, reaching out to a trusted person in your life would be important just to kind of know that you're not alone. So this might be a spouse, a sibling, a friend, parent. Those would be great people to reach out to and share your struggle. If you don't have a trusted person in your life, just going straight to talking to your primary care doctor. I do just want to put a little caution on that because I'm not sure how to word this right. But sometimes primary care doctors may not specifically recognize that someone is struggling just because typically what people think of people with eating disorders is very underweight, malnourished, significant weight loss, which that's the case for 6% of people with eating disorders, but 94% are not underweight. So I would just use caution. Like the first time that I reached out for help, I went to a therapist and she said that I was a normal teenage girl struggling with body image. And then a few months later, went to an eating disorder clinic and they diagnosed me with anorexia. So and my weight hadn't significantly changed in that time period. So just recognizing that if you go to someone and they're like, oh no, like that's normal, like you're an athlete, a female athlete, it's normal to not get your period. Like, no, it's not normal. That can be a sign of under eating, over exercising, can lead to bone density issues. So just always pursuing a second opinion. So if it doesn't go well with your primary care doctor, if you're in Wisconsin, Rogers Behavioral Health Hospital does free phone screenings. So I really recommend that to just anyone in Wisconsin or a different place that has Rogers. I know they're in Florida, Minnesota, a couple other states too, I think. So you can schedule a free phone screening. You'll talk to a therapist and they'll kind of ask you a bunch of questions. So that can be a great way to see like if you're struggling, and they might recommend a certain level of care and next steps for you. So that's an option as well. So reaching out to a trusted person in your life, getting connected with your primary care doctor, also reaching out to an eating disorder clinic. Even if you're not sure if you have like disordered eating, body image struggles, or like a full-blown eating disorder, everywhere in between that range is worthy of care and treatment. You don't have to have a diagnosed eating disorder to be able to go to therapy to work on body image struggles or struggles with food. So just knowing that even if you're like going to a primary care doctor and they're like, no, like, I think that's fine. Like your weight's fine. Your vitals are normal. Blood work is okay. Just really remembering that even if you're not diagnosed with an eating disorder, like that doesn't mean you should wait until things get really bad to get better. I kind of like to give the example of people that might be struggling with cancer. I don't want to compare cancer to eating disorders, but people with eating disorders tend to, there's this big thing around being sick enough for treatment and feeling like you're not sick enough, which if you looked at any other disease or illness, there's not really another illness where people almost wish they were more sick or wait till they're more sick to get better. So I think about if someone is diagnosed with stage one cancer, like they probably aren't going to wait till it gets to stage four to get help. Like you want to get it right away. So if you're diagnosed with early signs of an eating disorder or seeing that, like seek help now, just because it can get really ingrained if you keep on going down that path.
Now, I know it probably depends on, you know, it's the typical physical therapy answer. You know, it depends on all these care, you know, variables that'll depend on what we do. In general, once you've seen someone and it's like, okay, there's something that we need to improve upon. Is there like a general protocol that people follow of, okay, first we're going to work on, you know, body positivity or nutrition education to understand that, you know, I like to say food is fuel, to really change it to more of a positive mindset, or, you know, stop working out for X amount of time or track your calories to know that, you know, definitely still burning calories, or look at the scale. I mean, where do you start, or what is kind of the general thought process?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I will use the physical therapy answer of it depends, but also dive deeper because it definitely depends on how severe the eating disorder is, what level of care they're in. So there's different levels of care for struggling with an eating disorder. So the majority of people will get outpatient treatment. So that's like maybe once, twice a week, therapist, dietitian. And with that, well, I'll kind of go into levels of care and then I'll backtrack into like initial steps. So that would be kind of like the initial level of care potentially. That's for kind of like the least severe medically. Above that is intensive outpatient. So that is 3 hours a day, usually 5 days a week. Oh, above that is partial hospitalization. So that is a day program, usually like 8 a.m. to 2 or 3 p.m., eating like two meals there. And then above that is residential, so medically stable, but they're there potentially for months and stay overnight. And then inpatient is for medically unstable in a hospital setting. So in terms of initial steps, it definitely depends on what level of care you're in. If your eating disorder is really severe and you haven't had treatment and you're medically unstable, that would look like inpatient treatment where they're really focusing on keeping you stable, keeping your blood work okay, giving you nutrition, sometimes through an NG tube if you're having a hard time eating food. But for the majority of people with eating disorders, they do outpatient care. So initially, you'll do some sort of evaluation, screening to kind of get a better picture of where you're at. Definitely what's recommended for eating disorder treatment is having a therapist and dietitian, just because there's quite a bit of work that needs to be done food-wise, and then also just mentally with working with a therapist. So initially, this might look like getting a meal plan from a dietitian. Typically what's done is there's exchanges. So instead of using certain calorie amounts, which people with eating disorders may be very aware of calories and count calories quite often, there might be exchanges. So there'll be kind of like a little cheat sheet on what the exchanges mean. And maybe it is 2 grains for breakfast and 1 fat and 1 protein and 1 fruit. And then on the sheet, it'll show like, okay, so 2 grains is equal to 1 bagel or 2 slices of bread. 1 fat is equal to like this amount of peanut butter. So just a different way to look at getting enough nutrition without kind of focusing on calories. So potentially some sort of meal plan. Some dietitians do more of a loose meal plan too. They may have you track your food for like 3 days just so they can get a baseline of what you're eating and where you're at. The therapist will likely dive into kind of an eating disorder history and have you talk about like, when did you notice things started? What are things like currently? Can you tell me how they've been like since they started? Have they gotten worse, better? Things like that. So that'll kind of be initial. Talking about kind of eating disorder history, probably getting some sort of meal plan in or briefly tracking what you eat so they can kind of get a better idea at what things are going on. So I'll be kind of initially, and as you go on, just really working on following that meal plan, making sure you're getting enough food during the day. This might look like trying to break down some of those food rules. So maybe you have foods that you're fearful of or scared to eat or have been off limits. So really setting goals to start to eat those foods. If you struggle with exercise, they may have you stop exercising or cut back significantly or cut out very intense exercise just to help break that exercise compulsion and make sure that you're in an okay place medically and nutritionally to be able to exercise, just because we need more nourishment when we're exercising and moving our bodies. So that might be something that needs to be cut out for a bit just to kind of get you okay with not exercising and also just get the nourishment up. I know there are studies and things that say that it's important to exercise to continue to help with bone density and different things. So there's definitely differing views depending on different eating disorder clinics or therapists. For myself, I stopped exercising for a while just because it was something that was really difficult for me. And my eating disorder was so tied to exercise and running that I just kind of had to pull away for a bit and focus on just like even going out for a walk, which is something that I enjoy doing, became something that was like compulsive and I needed to do this certain amount and walk this certain distance. So in order to kind of get over that for me, I had to just cut that out. I know there's some people that continue to exercise or continue to run or compete during their eating disorder. And there's other people that just need to kind of completely stop with the exercise. So those are kind of initial things that might be worked on. And then talking about different triggers and things that come up, or if you're struggling with body image, diving deeper into that. Those are kind of some of the initial things.
I feel like the exercise component, now that you say that, I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to find a study off the top of my head. I'm going to look at it once we're done here, but I feel like, you know, people that are, and I just saw this on Instagram too, for physical therapy, you know, when you have someone that's injured doing a squat, well, now there's a big push. And I agree with it to a certain point of, well, we still should be squatting in our rehab program. We can't just say like, oh, we got to pull that back. But with the eating disorder, if the compulsion is tied also with exercise. If you're not even eating enough to sustain that activity, are you even getting the benefits of that routine to begin with? I mean, obviously, you know, weight bearing walking is so good for you. Resistance training, so good for your bones. But if you're not eating enough, are you actually doing worse for your body than good?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of times exercise tends to break the body down for someone that, like you said, like if they're not getting enough nourishment, they might not even be getting enough nourishment for baseline, what their body needs.
Yeah.
Even if they like laid in bed all day long and didn't get up or do anything or slept all day. Like, and some people aren't getting enough to that level. And now they're adding on a job and exercise and a significant amount of exercise. So yeah, definitely like there's the concern for like muscle breakdown. I think oftentimes we forget that the heart is a muscle. So like that can kind of break down and changes to that too. So you may have an athlete with a very low resting heart rate, which we've been taught like that's a sign of health, like their heart is pumping well. But if they have a heart rate below, what was it? I saw something from the MLE program. I don't know if it was below 60 or 50. I know 60 is kind of below 60 is bradycardic, but and any signs of an eating disorder that warrants a physician's referral to kind of check that out. Just because if you have signs of an eating disorder and your heart rate is below 60, like, is your heart rate low because you are running quite a bit and doing aerobic exercise? Is it low because you're not getting enough nourishment and now there's changes going on in your body? So definitely just recognizing the fact that I think our culture views exercise as this like 100% necessary thing. Everybody needs to do it. Otherwise this and this, these diseases and these things will happen. But also there's this population that exercise can be really damaging to their body, and they might not be in a space to be able to do that right now, which can also lead to why is recovering from an eating disorder so hard in our culture when exercise is like placed very, very highly and eating only certain types of food is placed very highly and looking a certain way. It's really countercultural, really, to recover from an eating disorder, to have a healthy relationship with food where you can eat a wide range of foods and have a healthy relationship with exercise where you don't feel this rigid need to exercise, but you exercise because you enjoy it, because it feels good in your body, because it allows you to connect with other people. That was a little bit of a tangent, but just kind of how
eating disorder. I agree with you. I mean, I really feel strongly about this one, which is why, you know, I think this part two is fantastic. I think we live in such a culture of extremes to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, you can take that to any sort of topic you want.
Yeah.
But I think the food and fitness industry, I'll put them together as one. There's so much extremism that goes on, you know, even from... You could look at people getting ready for bodybuilding shows. Yes. Do they eat a very restricted diet? Yes. But that's for a specific reason. And I'm not knocking on it because I think it gets a bad rap. You still have to work really hard. But they're also using drugs to help with that transformation.
Yeah.
You then see a normal person be like, well, that person says that they lost weight in got shredded in 60 days. I could pull up my YouTube right now because my wife does her workouts on YouTube.
Yeah.
I could pull up a bunch of different people that say, if you can get shredded in 60 days by only eating X, Y, and Z. And then we think that, well, if I eat brown rice instead of white rice or put a little bit of salt or oil on my food to give it some flavor, that 5, 10, 15 calories is going to be a make or break between me being positive for the day or me being super negative. And it drives me nuts. I just find it crazy that we live in this extreme one or the other type of culture.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. There's definitely, it's kind of all or nothing. And then it's like, we need the middle ground where, hey, it's okay to like eat what your body's craving, and also recognize that eating what your body's craving doesn't mean that you're going to eat cupcakes and cookies and donuts all day long, but when you're really in tune with what your body wants, like maybe you'll decide like, hey, I want some pasta and chicken at lunch. I want a salad and bread at dinner, and I'm going to have a cookie for dessert, and just really recognizing our body's cues. And then we have these things on social media, these people that have these very specific body types, like for bodybuilders and bikini competitors and things like that. And we see those images and we're like, well, why doesn't my body look like that? Should my body look like that? But what I like to tell people too is that the images that we see on social media, we can't tell if they're healthy, and that fitness isn't a look. So I think we have in our mind and culture and our society that like to be fit means to be lean, to have very little body fat, to exercise a ton. So you might see an image of someone that fits that category and you're like, that's a really healthy person. That's a really fit person. I'm going to print out their picture and I'm going to use that as motivation for myself. But you have no idea the history or background. You don't know if they're using any steroids or different harmful diet pills. You don't know if they're struggling with an eating disorder or exercise addiction. Maybe they had a death of a loved one leading to severe depression, having a hard time to eat, leading to their body to change in that way. So I think just recognizing too that with these extremes and with these images we see on social media, that to be really careful with that, just because we have no idea the health of that person. Maybe they look quote unquote healthy to what we think healthy should look like or fit. But we really have no idea. We don't know what they're eating. Maybe they're eating very little during the day. Maybe they haven't had their period for years and they have the bone density of a 70-year-old. So just being really cautious with those extremes and really working to find that middle ground. Something that I like to promote is intuitive eating, which has 10 different principles, really focusing on honoring your hunger and fullness, getting rid of the diet police, really focusing on exercising to feel the difference rather than exercising to punish or change your appearance, and really focusing on just getting back in tune with your bodies, like thinking about kids, how they'll eat a couple pieces of food at lunch, they'll go out and play, they'll come back in when they're hungry, and they're really in tune with their bodies, and we get really disconnected as we just grow and become adults. So really finding that middle ground.
So, you know, once we kind of establish this middle ground and people are, you know, on the road to recovery, so to speak, even though, I mean, maybe you have a different opinion, but I feel like road to recovery just makes it, to me, seem a little more daunting versus, you know, more of a, you know, we're going to get through this, you know, positive type thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else I would call it now that I'm saying that. Yeah. But what do you use as a gauge or think is a good gauge to make sure that, okay, yep, you know, I'm intaking what I need to, because I feel like, and you kind of, you hinted at it before, like with the calorie counting, if you use a scale, that could just basically create a compulsion mm-hmm. in a different direction. Do you think that subjective reporting is, you know, strong enough evidence for people, or do you have another way of, you know, helping people kind of track to make sure they're on the right path?
Yeah, definitely. So I think it's a little bit controversial in the eating disorder world to like weigh or not to weigh. So
what's not controversial anymore? Everything. Yeah.
Yes. So it's like therapists have to make the call of should this patient see their weight when they step on the scale? Because you can argue that kind of related to like OCD recovery, exposure response prevention, like them being exposed to their weight. They can work together with the therapist to help to challenge negative thoughts that come up, help to stop any behaviors that might come up. Or is it worth it to do that? And do you just have the patient not see their weight and just allow them to recover and to gain weight and have their body change? So I'm more in the camp of like not weighing. Maybe that's just because that's what my experience was like. And I haven't weighed myself in years. So just there's that aspect of it where sometimes weight can be too big of a number for people, especially early in recovery. So to see that number jump up and up and up as you've been watching it go down, down, down can be really difficult. So, recovery markers as well. Yeah. So, also I wanted to touch on how you talked about kind of recovery journey versus like check markers and things. And to me, this is also controversial in the recovery community. Can you fully recover, or is it this lifelong thing that you manage? Our name is Live Recovered, so naturally we believe that full recovery is possible. And to me, feeling that like full recovery wasn't possible, or this was something I was going to have for my whole life, was something that felt really daunting and kind of endless and hopeless a little bit. So for me, it gave me hope to think that, hey, there's one day that I could be free of these thoughts and these behaviors and free to eat birthday cake on my birthday and to be able to take a rest day and to enjoy my life without being consumed by thoughts of like my body and things like that. So kind of two different camps there for recovery versus like fully recovered. In terms of like road markers, mile markers, whatever you'd like to call them for recovery, things that you can notice that kind of show that you're on the right path is being able to fully follow your meal plan, being more spontaneous with food. So if you have friends or family that are like, hey, I'd love to go get ice cream with you tonight, and not having this like extreme panic response to it, or not thinking like, oh, I need to exercise this amount, or like, how much am I going to eat? How many calories? Like just being able to go out and eat the ice cream. That's a great mile marker too. Also being able to take rest day from exercise and not feel super panicked, to be able to change up your exercise routine if you find out like, hey, like your husband wanted to go to the store a little bit earlier, so now like you have to cut your workout short, or it's gonna storm later, so now you need to like do an indoor workout instead. Being able to be flexible with exercise is another good sign that you're kind of on the way. Also, decreasing thoughts about your body. So as we move farther into recovery, we will hit points where we'll notice body changes potentially, and that might be really difficult. But as you get farther and farther into recovery, you will spend less time thinking about your body. It was put in this really beautiful way in one of these online video programs that I did, but becoming body unaware, where you're just so in tune with living your life and focusing on all of these other passions you have that you just don't even have time to think about your body. And it's just like you're living in your body, you're experiencing this world without being consumed of how big does my stomach look? How big do my legs look in this? Are my arms too small? Are they too big? So those are definitely good signs. And even if you're feeling really distressed with some of those, like feeling distressed with being a bit more flexible with eating, feeling distressed with doing a different exercise routine, if you're doing that step and you're challenging yourself and you're able to resist any behaviors afterwards, that is an awesome step too. So really just not getting discouraged if you have thoughts that pop up or it feels like recovery is endless. I don't have an exact like statistic, but one of my favorite therapists that I had, I would get discouraged. I'm like, it feels like I'm struggling forever. And she told me like, Megan, like once you start struggling, usually it's like 7 years, or once you seek treatment, it's like 7 years to recover. She's like, think about how long you've had these thought patterns and these behaviors. Cause by the time I received treatment, like outpatient treatment, I had had body image struggles since middle school. I had started treatment like my sophomore year of college. I started having some different food behaviors and like avoiding certain foods at the beginning of high school, and that worsened through high school. So just also giving yourself grace if you feel like it's taking forever, like I still have these thoughts, I still have these behaviors, like that's a lot of stuff to unlearn in our brains. And I just love the neuroplasticity example of like, now you're trying to fully recover, you're trying to have different thought patterns and be flexible with eating and all of this. It's like, that's like this giant jungle path in your brain. It's all jungle. And now you need to kind of like use this machete, whack your way through it, and then kind of go back and forth. And then eventually you put down some gravel, and eventually you're able to pave it. And then it becomes 2-lane road, highway, 5-lane highway. So it takes a lot of time to get there. And it also takes a lot of time to jump off of that 5-lane highway that's in your brain that's telling you, like, my body's disgusting. Like, I need to avoid this food. Like, if I don't exercise, that's terrible. Like, That's a 5-lane highway in your brain. A lot of people struggle with eating disorders for many years before seeking help. So now you're moving from this 5-lane highway and you're supposed to go to this jungle. Like, that's not going to be easy. So just really giving yourself grace for if it feels like it's taking longer than what you think it should.
I know you've probably, you know, kind of talked about this with what you just said, because I think you're going to repeat it once I ask this question. What is one piece of advice that you would give someone, or the top piece of advice that either helped you or, you know, for someone that is struggling or potentially is struggling?
I would say, I'll share a couple pieces, to never give up, no matter how hard it feels, just because it can feel really hopeless to struggle with an eating disorder. A lot of times there's like different underlying factors like perfectionism, anxiety, depression. So it can feel really hopeless and endless to struggle. So really never giving up, even when you want to get up. So just focusing on that, and also knowing that full recovery is possible, that it is possible to fully recover, that there are people out there that are free from eating disorder thoughts and behaviors. I'm one of them. So never giving up, full recovery is possible, and giving yourself grace. It's really easy to be hard on yourself. It's really easy to set timelines or want to be back for the certain sports season or want to be back to compete in this marathon or to be recovered by X year, X day. And it's great to set goals for ourselves, but also it's okay to give ourselves grace and not have to hold to this specific timeline when recovery is a journey. It's not going to be a straight upward trajectory. It's like climbing a mountain and different paths and going up and down, and that's okay.
Well, Megan, thank you again for sitting down for another podcast. I mean, I think this was just a build on what we talked about before. I would argue for someone that doesn't do this, you know, all the time, in a sense of, you know, I don't have a nonprofit revolved around this, but I do try and be as athletic as I can. And, you know, you and I both played in college. I think this affects a whole lot more people than anyone would like to admit. So I think this topic is so important. And I think you've brought some, you know, fantastic points and very digestible information to let people, you know, understand what goes on in this type of process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think there's a lot more people that are struggling. There's tons of people that struggle with body image. Like I said, you don't have to struggle with an eating disorder for body image and food to be something that's really tearing apart your life. And just something else that I wanted to add is there's tons of online support groups too. Live Recovered has some, ANAD has some. Who else has some? I wrote down a list, but even just doing a Google search for eating disorder support groups, eating disorder recovery groups, and joining one of those, even if you're not sure that you have an eating disorder, even if you haven't taken the other steps, like just getting connected with some help would be really important.
Refresh, before we finish, tell us again where we can find more information about Live Recovered.
Yeah, definitely. So you can find us at liverecovered.org. We're also on Instagram at liverecovered. You are welcome to email me anytime. My email, I answer our nonprofit email. So it's liverecovered@gmail.com.
Megan, thank you again. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You got it. I'll put Megan's contact in our little show notes that we post on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So if people wanting more information, it'll be right in the description for part two here.
Thank you to Megan for coming on to another podcast with us here at Freedom. She's been a fantastic guest for not one, but two podcasts, and is so accommodating with her time to come on our podcast with us. So special thank you to Megan. I think her story is so powerful too, and what she's doing now outside of physical therapy with her Live Recovered. I think for me as a classmate, I think it's just super fantastic. So always good to get to talk with her. So if anybody has any comments or any other podcast suggestions or topics that you'd like us to cover, please let us know. Or if anybody would like to be seen here at Freedom Physical Therapy, we have clinics either here in Fox Point, Brookfield, Grafton, or Maguanago. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see everyone in the next week's episode.